This is the July 16th meeting of the Pacifica National Board. It's 9:34. I'll ask our secretary, Afia Nwangaza, to call the roll.
Shram Agmir. Tracy Rosenberg.
Here.
Andrea Turner. Joe Wanzala.
Here.
Sean O'Brien.
Present.
Leslie Radford. Summer Reese. Rico Ross. Bill Crozier.
Here.
Alberto Luera. George Ryder.
Here.
Richard Uzel.
Here.
Nia Vediaco.
Present.
Kathy Davis. Jennifer Jaeger.
Here.
Alex Steinberg.
Present.
Alonzo Brown. Campbell Johnson.
Here.
Kimmery Orendorf.
Present.
Marcel Reed.
Present.
Jim Bennett. Afia Nwangaza, present. Do we need a timekeeper? I believe we have quorum. Do we need a timekeeper at this point?
Well, let's see what the we'll set an agenda first, and then we'll see. There were two items on this morning's agenda. Well, three, actually. One is setting the agenda, and the other two items were a workshop led by Tony Pohl, and we were going to have a breakout session after that. The session, Tony Pohl was scheduled for 110 minutes, roughly 2 hours. We're starting 36 minutes late. What my suggestion is that we approve the agenda as it is, that we give Tony the full time, and we make do with the last 20 minutes or so with whatever we think we need to do, and it might just run over in questions. Is there any objection to that morning's agenda? We'll set the agenda for the rest of the workshop this evening. Okay. Hearing none, Tony?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Time should not be an issue. I believe I will have you all successfully sleeping in the next 20 minutes. I want to introduce with me the slideshow that we have. Says it's a presentation by Tony Pohl and Don McPhee. Unfortunately, Don had a client emergency out of state, and therefore I've asked one of my partners, Noel McNabola. Noel is very familiar with Pacifica, and he's acted as second partner on this engagement. He's very familiar with the client, and I've asked him to help in the presentation.
Very quick question. Will we be able to get copies of the...
Yes, a PowerPoint presentation was emailed to Nia a couple of weeks ago. Okay. Well, there is one available, and that was made available for the stream.
Thank you so much,
George. If you could remove
yes. And if you would you just forward that?
I apologize. I didn't. It was also sent to Levine. I didn't think of doing it. I apologize.
Well, would you forward?
Yeah, do it.
Some technical. I can't get on the internet. You know what?
Yeah,
I just keep counting the hotel. You'll get the hotel, okay. When you go to pick lobby, let me explain, please. Pick lobby. I'm sorry. There's a lot going on. Pick the lobby. It says lobby Wi-Fi. If it's okay, I think we can do this privately. So we don't get confused. Thank you.
I don't see.
Could you do it for everybody?
She's going to do it for
Alex.
I understand.
If you pick lobby, the lobby drop down.
Hotel Duran.
And then you keep hitting select. You keep hitting continue, and eventually you log in.
Yeah, 2600
to
look at.
Okay.
I think it's as good as it gets. I don't
all right.
Have
any. No, that's fine. Yeah. I think when I was today's presentation comes as a result of a meeting with the audit committee sometime in the spring. The audit committee was looking into the definition of COSO, and that was we made reference to the COSO in our last management letter or report card. And one of the things we said was we want you to develop an accounting policy and internal controls in accordance with the COSO framework. And rightly so, a lot of eyes went up, and what's COSO? I think what we're starting to do at this meeting is hopefully over the next few years, because this is not going to be just a two-hour presentation and that's it. Hopefully what we're doing is starting to lay this groundwork for the implementation of policies and procedures for your organization such that, as I've said many a time, somebody in L.A. could wake up one morning in New York and go to the office and find that the policies and procedures are really the same, that they've become standardized, that we've got security over assets and security over reporting, and the ethical standards in New York are the same as in Houston or Berkeley or Los Angeles. It doesn't matter. You're one and the same organization. What is COSO? COSO is grew out of the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act in 1977. Those of you, and I see a few gray hairs in the room, I'm not the only one, probably remember Michael Milken and the Junk Bond King and Charles Keating and the Keating Five. There was concern, and actually even before that, the Western Teamsters of Union, Western Conference of Teamsters, there was concern about fraud, and from that went developed into not only the abstraction of assets, but the abstraction of fraudulent reporting. So in the mid-'80s, the Treadway Commission was a congressional commission formed to talk about accounting practices, helped really in a lot of ways assemble the Committee of Sponsoring Organizations, which was, as you can see on the screen, the American Accounting Association, the American Institute of CPAs, Financial Executives International, Association for Accounting and Financial Professionals, and the Institute of Internal Auditors. The idea was to sort of help put together a framework that would standardize governance and reporting, not just the control of assets. Up until the 70s, as the auditors, we were charged with, or your internal, when we talked about internal control, we were focused on access to assets and access to liabilities. COSO took it to another level, to developed it to a much deeper way of thought. It started focusing on reporting and overall just your management practices to make them effective, efficient, and very importantly, ethical. It, as the slide says, it deals with the needs and expectations of management by standardizing, setting up some common definitions that everybody could understand, no matter who the end user is, whether it's government, whether it's a board of directors, or shareholders, or the public at large. The idea was to set up a standard that we could compare ourselves against other organizations and establish a system of internal control. Internal control is something it's a process that's designed to establish safeguarding of assets and setting up a system of policies and procedures that achieve certain objectives, effectiveness and efficiency of operations. And you know that those of you who listened to my presentations over the last 2 years will know that this is something I've discussed in broad terms over the last couple of years. Reliability of financial reporting. No matter how good the books and records are, if the information is not correctly and accurately reported, it's kind of meaningless. Compliance is more and more is becoming a very topical index with applicable laws and regulations. Effectiveness of operations. It's getting an understanding of what your performance is and the profitability goals, because even as a not-for-profit, you have to make a profit in order to sustain your longevity. Reliability of financial reporting. Equally important is that your interim financial statements are accurately stated. You can't make decisions. It's very difficult to make decisions on a year-end basis 6 or 7 months after the end of the year. You need to know accurately on an ongoing basis throughout the year how your organization is functioning. Compliance with applicable laws and regulations. What this talks about is the ability to comply with the IRS rules. In California, as a California organization, you have to comply with Senate Bill 1262, which is the Fair Financial Reporting Act of, 2004, I believe. Internal control is a process. It's a way of getting us from the very first transaction that's recorded, when the very first donation comes in, and it's the process that gets us, ends us up at this level, at the board level, where that donation is reported. It focuses on the safeguarding of the assets, as well as reporting those assets to the board of directors and the public. It's control by people. It's not just a matter of policies and forms and paperwork, but it deals with people at every level, from the person that records those, from the person who takes that first pledge, to the people that review those financial statements to summarize all those pledges. Now, this is actually very important. This slide says it can be expected to provide reasonable but not absolute assurance. As accountants, we're always faced with the dilemma of providing timely, accurate information. And obviously, the more time goes by, the more accurate we can get that information. But that accurate information, even though it may be 100% correct, if it's a year or 2 years after the fact, it loses a lot of meaning. So it's important to establish a system that will give you fairly comfortable assurance about your financial statements. You'll hear me when I've talked to you in the past about materiality. We'll make a judgment call and say, is this material? Would this affect a donor's decision-making ability about this organization? Will it affect a bank's decision-making process in perhaps lending the organization money? If the answer is no, then we'll conclude that that's not a material amount. Now, materiality can change, because if we start talking about restricted gifts, materiality doesn't come into play. That becomes a legal issue. If I've given you $100,000 for a specific program, then you're restricted by law to spending that $100,000 on that program. So we can't look at it from a materiality perspective, and neither can the board. You have to look at it in absolutes. Is the money being spent according to the donor's wishes? You've got a legal obligation. There are several different components of internal control, and this actually will come up. Noel's going to talk about this more in a pyramid. And basically, we start with what's called a control environment. We then move to assessing the risk. We look at evaluate control activities. We then look at the information and communication process. And then finally, the monitoring process, which starts with the board. This is right now what we're looking at is an inverted pyramid where the control environment forms the foundation of everything it is that you do. Now, each one of these 5 points, we have very detailed questionnaires and checklists that we, over time we'd like to share with the board and management and have you start evolving those. Here's the pyramid that we talked about. The basis is the control environment that goes all the way up to monitoring, which really focuses on the board's review of the organization's results and reporting those results to your membership and to the IRS and the state of California. It sets the tone for the foundation. It's the basis of everything that we do. Risk assessment looks at the business risk that you have to take, both internally and externally. For example, is it worth spending a lot of resources to keep count, control of the $100 in petty cash, or is it more important to focus on that $350,000 check that may be left on somebody's desk? You have to set those controls and those objectives, and with our guidance, I think we can help you establish those. It's the identification analysis and making conclusions about how those tie into your objectives. Control activities, those are the policies and procedures. You as the board of directors sets that, gives the management a dictate as to how these are to be carried out. This is done in the way of developing policies to help not only to make sure that people can from one location can come and to another location and follow those, you know what the policies are, but also help identify what actions need to be taken to address any sort of business risks that you can have. Control activities occur throughout all levels and in all functions, whether it's payroll, whether it's taking of pledges, reporting information, doing bank reconciliations, as well as the segregation of duties, which is one of the fundamental concepts. Those who have access to assets shouldn't have access to records, because that creates a weakness. Information and communication, this is the other part of the framework. What that says is that what we're trying to do is to make sure all that information is gathered in a timely manner and then reported to those appropriate individuals. It contains operational information on how many pledges have you taken, financial information, what's the value of those pledges, how much of those pledges are collectible, and compliance, making sure that we comply with those pledges. Communication, this is almost at the top. We've got to be able to communicate that information not only up to the board level, but also, to the IRS and the Attorney General as necessary, and to donors. Monitoring. Well, we monitor the progress during the normal course of business through monthly reporting to the board and to management. Who's responsible for internal control? And I really want to make sure this stands out. Everybody. And that starts with this organization and goes down. How do our responsibilities break out? Well, you as the board of directors are responsible for the governance and the oversight. You're elected to this to the board of this organization, and you in turn delegate the responsibilities for the day-to-day running to the CEO, or in this case the executive director. Some organizations have internal auditors, and this is something at some point in time that as an organization you may wish to discuss, whether you want to have some sort of internal audit function. Other personnel, the accounting department, the HR department, they're all also responsible for reporting their appropriate levels of information. So what does internal control do? Well, it helps achieve performance and profitability targets. It will help prevent the loss of resources. It's critical in ensuring that you've got reliable financial information so that you can make informed business decisions. And it also helps you in compliance with applicable laws. it really does help you get to where it is you need to go. What it can't do, internal control can't ensure success, 100% success. Again, it's meant to be, it has to be a mousetrap that works, but it doesn't have to be an absolute mousetrap. It can't be designed to capture every single weakness. Otherwise, the level of investment in making that mousetrap, there are no returns on it. It can't ensure the reliability of financial information because, again, problems can occur if you've got the right level of control. You will have accurate financial information, and ensuring from that is compliance with the laws and regulations to make sure that we're reporting that information correctly. Limitations of internal control. Well, judgment can be one of them. Somebody can deem something not to work very well. There can be breakdowns in the system. Management overrides can occur, although most internal control systems should capture those. Collusion becomes very difficult. If two people collude within an organization, it can be very difficult to find. However, I will argue that in a lot of cases, collusion can be identified. Cost versus benefit. Again, this is the issue of how smarter or how big a mousetrap it is you develop. Oops, we've gone too far. Did I skip through all of those?
I'll have to read
those. Yeah. I'm sorry. I went into Noel's presentation without even recognizing it. Noel's going to go back and cover some of the other points in more detail.
I'm not sure. Hello. My name is Noel, as in Noel Coward. Just want to make sure everybody knows that. Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here. Nice to meet you all. It's an interesting operation you have here, but I'm going to repeat some of what Tony said. I'm going to recover it. On the theory, I think it's a military theory, you first of all tell people what you're going to tell them, then you tell them, and then you tell them what you told them. So this is the telling. Tony told you what we're going to tell you, and I'm going to tell you it. So covering internal controls, if we can skip back a few. I've got two mics here. This mic is not working. Okay. In any adventure or endeavor in life, you know, we all want to know where we're going. What is the end goal? And so, as part of the board's responsibilities, you outline the mission, the organization's mission. And then you must decide how are we going to get there. And there are a number of processes that are employed in getting there. For instance, you could have an operational budget. You might have a technical plan, a business plan is a general term that's used for it. But you will have a goal and you'll have a plan for how to get there. But the actual implementation or the control over getting there is what's called the internal controls. And these cover a broad area of the operations, from financial to operational to human resources, technical, and so on. I'll cover mainly the financial internal controls, but the objective is what we must keep in mind. What is the end? Where do we want to go? And how do we get there? So, as it says, it is a process. It's not the end. The the process is implemented by people. I mean, every organization is comprised of people, and the people are what make you what you are. If you were a different group, then of course you'd be a different kind of organization. But you have a mission. When each radio station was set up, you set out with a mission in mind, and you got the people that you needed or you thought would be best fitted to accomplish that mission, and put them in place, give them the tools, and then set them off so that they can accomplish their objectives. It is these people. You must select the best people that you can. Look at them. Do they have the integrity, the ability, and give them the tools to accomplish the objectives. And it starts at the top. The board, the CEO, the CFO, the COO, the chief technical officers, everybody is involved. Now, as we're all human, nobody is perfect, nothing is perfect, so we've got to strive for what we think is achievable, and we want to achieve reasonable assurance that we can control our journey to the end. That's what we're looking for. Not absolute assurance. We want to make sure that the benefits we receive do not outweigh the costs. Okay.
The benefits, I want to make sure they do not outweigh the
costs. All right. I'm sorry, the cost did not outweigh the benefits.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Was that just a test to make sure that you had not quite put us to sleep yet?
that's good. You passed the test.
Thank you.
There may be other tests as we go through, so just... Yeah. Don't be afraid to interrupt me and ask questions or correct me if you do catch them. Anyway, it is this process of keeping control of the organization. You know, the organization is a complex organization. I hate to use the same word twice, but it involves a lot of people, from technical to human resources, again to financial. And all of these parts must be guided in some sort of a cohesive manner so that you can get from where we are to where you want to be. Now, normally at the beginning of the year, you'll set out with a plan like a budget or something like that to get to the end of the fiscal year. And you need the controls in place to get there. Next one. The components. Everybody wants to know what do we need to do to control the organization, and what are the parts, the components of the internal control? The first one is listed there, control environment, and this is what we might call the tone at the top, or the tone not just at the top, but the tone throughout the organization. And it is set at the top. If the board is lax about their oversight, then management will be lax about their oversight because the board doesn't care. If management is lax, then the staff will also be kind of relaxed about achieving that. So when we're auditing, when we select or when we take on a new client, one of the first things that we do, maybe not overtly, but we always look at the board of directors, the tone. What sort of people are they? Are they the type of people that we want to work with? We want to work with honest people, conscientious people who really do care about what they're doing. They care about their organization. And if the board can convey this this honesty and integrity, then they will select similar people to put in management positions. And then, of course, the management will select similar people to actually carry out the daily operations. So the control environment is this tone that runs through the organization.
Noel, if I can interrupt a moment. One of the things that we do in this process is look at what we call the control consciousness of the organization. As Noel stated, we start with the board. We really do help evaluate, you know, try to evaluate what our thoughts are about the organization, starting right with the board of directors and the finance committee and the audit committee. And from there, that's how we then decide. And we actually look at this on an annual basis, at the beginning of every audit, before you even see our staff out requesting canceled checks and so on. We've had a meeting in our office with the entire audit team. With the partner, myself, with Noel as a second partner, the engagement manager and the audit staff. And we sit down and have a discussion that can last several hours, actually, and talk about the different areas that we feel are a risk in the organization. And obviously, starting at that very top, we talk about the control consciousness of the organization. You know, are you as a board, do you care about the financial statements that you get? You know, do you care whether they're late? Whether they're accurate. And from there, we start assessing our business risk.
Question. Let me take privilege of interrupting. One of the things that I think I would suspect that you would be interested in is that the board will, at its meetings, receive timely financial statements, and the board will have reviewed them and passed them in one way or another, acted upon them. Is that correct?
Definitely. excuse me. Yes, I mean, this is one of the things we look at to see how often you meet as an organization. You know, we've had clients in the past where the board meets every other year, and we've sort of disassociated ourselves from those clients because clearly if they don't care about their organization, why should we? Mm-hmm. Yes, we care about how often you meet, about what financial information you receive. And in fact, you've heard me talk last year and the year before about seeing financial information that on an interim basis throughout the year is very somewhat similar to what you get from us at the end of the year, so that when it comes to the end of the year, you're not, you know, nobody's sort of getting glass-eyed because they don't understand the financial statements, but they've seen those financial statements throughout the year, and that helps in their understanding of those both year-end and interim results. Yeah.
Thank you.
It's not just the financial information that you should be interested in, but, again, in your operation, you'll have different areas. I'm not entirely familiar with the broadcasting area, but I know you'll have technical issues, you'll have programming issues, human relations issues. All of these should be dealt with your regular board meetings, and I'm sure they are. Many boards are set up with subcommittees to take kind of charge with of these individual areas, and then the committees will report to the board as a whole. But yeah, if you have that sort of an organization in place, then it tells us that you are at least set up in the right manner. Now, again, nothing ever works perfectly if you have the wrong people in place, and so we want to make sure that you do. And you know, we're people, we're human also, so we make mistakes, and sometimes you know, you can blow smoke in our ear and we don't realize it. But I think, you know, after being in this business for I hate to say 30 years, we get to be pretty reasonable judges of integrity and character, and we can tell when somebody is honest and not honest, unless they, you know, again, with collusion, it's one of those things that it's hard to overcome. But nonetheless, we as outside auditors look for we try to assess the integrity of the board, the tone of the top, the tone of the organization, and then we move forward.
Just a quick suggestion is, bear in mind this is a public meeting, we stream this and archive it, but as many specifics as you can give related to our organization that all of our board needs to know would be helpful, because I know I've heard them on the audit committee, but Tony was very good at providing a report to us in January, but what we still need to be working on and aware of would be very helpful if you could mention those specifics.
And I will address those in the section called PMB checklists, start laying out a conceptual framework for sort of repeat some of the items that we've talked about.
Could I ask another question? I heard you say that there's a point at which you do a business risk assessment. And my question is whether or not it's your business risk assessment or the client's business risk assessment that's being done?
That's a great question. Actually, we do our business risk assessment before we even get to that part. No, I'm being flippant, but it's a business risk assessment about you as an organization. And that is whether what we're trying to do is evaluate what sort of, as Noel alluded, the tone at the top, whether you've got those controls or an attempting to put those controls in place that make you a viable organization.
Remember, our objective is to sign that first page, the opinion page, where we say that in our opinion the financial statements present fairly the financial position of the organization and the results of operations for the year. And our objective is to gather a body of evidence, enough evidence that can support that opinion. And when we look at the client and we're doing this assessment, we're looking to see, do we think that this organization, that these people are honest and have high integrity, that we can reasonably rely on what they tell us? And we don't just rely on what you tell us, but we have to go and get some independent evidence to back it up. But yes, as part of our audit process, we do make an assessment to see, are you a client that we want to have continuing relations with?
This is Nick. Who's supposed to? I just speak out? Sorry. Now, Afia and Bill actually asked two of my questions, but my third was going to be, in terms of the performance and the, the profitability targets, will you be talking specifically about those, customizing those for us during that discussion? Because I think that as board, but let me speak for myself. That's what I'm hoping to get out of this, is how can we as a board help this organization to get out of the financial quagmire that we are in right now?
Really, Nia, I wasn't really prepared to specifically talk about profitability issues because, you know, as your auditor, we come in, we look at your operations, we look at your activities, we look to see whether the assertions that you're making in the financial statements are correct. There are certain components to profitability that, you know, we can look at in our business judgment and say, well, you know, they're not handling HR functions correctly, or they're doing things in such a manner that leads them open to legal issues. Yes, we can sort of discuss those in general terms. I think if you wanted us to look at profitability from more of a consulting basis, then I would need more time, or we would need more time to sort of really look at those financial statements from that perspective. Where can they cut? Where can they make some cuts?
Streamline your organization is, I think, one of the areas. But Tony is right. I was not prepared to get into specific details about what you should do or what you shouldn't do, and I'm not familiar enough with your organization to tell you anyway. But in general terms, you know, if you can. The board is the top of the pyramid, And if you can organize your board in such a manner that it accomplishes or its objectives in the most efficient manner, and you know, like I said, many boards are organized with subcommittees or committees that deal with certain specific areas. I'm on the board of the blood bank in San Francisco, and we have a finance committee, we have an investment committee, we have a human resources committee, and a committee that deals with medical matters, and a committee that deals with legal matters, and these committees meet as subcommittees of the board, and then report back to the board. But and then again, of course, they deal with the management in each particular area. I don't know if you're set up that way, but we found that that's one
similar
organization that works well for us.
But Noel makes actually a very good point in reference to Nia's question. And I think what we're trying to say is that while we can't specifically perhaps address profitability at this issue, at this meeting, the profitability component, and I speak that in terms of a not-for-profit organization, those efficiencies will happen as the committees start functioning, you know, as they start running their own, as they really start evaluating and running their own committee areas of responsibility, that will then or should translate into a more efficient and a more profitable organization. And again, profitability is a general term for a not-for-profit, because profitability may mean giving away a lot of money. May mean developing programs at the organization's cost. So there's profitability has a lot of different definitions. But what I think, if the tone at the top starts with committees that are functioning well, as an organization, any organization will be more efficient, and efficiency can lead to profitability on that big spectrum of whether it's money or giving away money.
Could I ask it? That's another question about, in addition to this presentation to the board today, are you also meeting with the GMs and business managers of the various stations?
We have not yet met with the managers of the various stations. LeVon Williams and Arlene and I and the audit manager, Selena Lam, are scheduled to meet in the next couple of weeks to start talking about the audit process to begin this fall. We certainly hope that, as I stated at the beginning, this is, you know, we're starting down a path. And sort of hopefully out of this, whether it's us or you as a board, start, you know, talking to your, giving the message to management that you need to start focusing on policies and procedures at that station level.
Thank you.
May I say something?
Well, Tony, do you want me to facilitate this, or do you want to just pick call people?
Whichever I'm quite comfortable in answering questions.
Well, then I'll let you just recognize that.
At the end of last year, there was a delay because of the difficulty in getting significant stuff at WBAI. Structurally, what wasn't there? Have efforts been made to clarify that structure so that it'll be there this year?
I believe changes are occurring. Obviously, we haven't started the audit process yet, so it's very difficult for me to comment on what's transpired since we finished the audit. But I talked to the executive director before the meeting started, and she told me that changes were being made. As I said, we will, as we start our audit planning process in the very, very near future, obviously we're going to look at that.
Thank you.
Nia, did you have a question?
Yeah, I was going to answer Fia's question also. That's why the audit committee had made that motion, that it's part of this particular training, which we recommended for 4 hours, include all of those people, if folks remember.
We would be delighted to. I think, you know, as we can get the station managers together, and we doesn't have to be an in-person meeting, we can do it over a stream or over a teleconference.
That's what we had talked about, the webinar.
We'd be delighted to do that because, and I'm actually, you know, we sort of talk about the tone at the top. I'm really excited because I see there's an interest at the top level to make sure that you start implementing those procedures. So, yeah, and when I see that level of enthusiasm at the board level, then we also become enthused.
Tony, also, this is Campbell Johnson again. When you're speaking of profitability in the nonprofit world, I think that relates to how closely, if I'm correct, how closely we are pursuing the mission of the organization. I mean, it's not just the dollars and cents that are returned to stockholders, of which we have none. We have shareholders, or stakeholders, rather. But I was wondering if you could maybe mention how that is coming into play in terms of your work with Pacifica.
Yeah, Campbell, I think you are a lot more eloquent in stating and defining the terms of profitability, because obviously profitability is not just about money. Although money does become a part of it, because without it, you can't survive as an organization. All right. But given that, it's not just about collecting money. It's about making good use of the monies that you receive to carry out your stated mission. And obviously, we look at that. And we look at the donations that you receive to make sure that you're spending those funds in accordance with the donor's wishes.
Thank you.
Well, I'm happy to see that there's quite a high tone set here at this meeting, that the board is actively interested in the operations. But that is one part of the internal control structure of the organization, and there are others. As we move down the list here, the risk assessment. Everybody makes a risk assessment. Maybe not consciously, but we do. We make a risk assessment. What are the most important aspects of our operation that we need to pay attention to in order to get from here to our end goal? And, you know, Campbell, your question kind of very much comes into play in this. And what are some of those areas might be? What sort of programming do we want to put on so that we can sell airtime? Do you have advertising? I should have asked. But you need to raise money somehow, and your mission is what gets you the money. If you didn't have a good mission, then nobody would give you money. But having a good mission is probably the most important step. We have clients who have no trouble raising money because they've got a great mission. We've got other clients that survive from hand to mouth, from week to week, because even though their mission is, I think, very worthy and admirable, it's just that the public out there doesn't quite see it the same way, and so they don't fund it. But your risks of your operational risks, your financial risks, are all critical areas that you must assess and decide where are you going to focus your efforts. The control activities, and these are the policies and procedures that you need to implement. This is where you get into some of the nitty-gritty of internal controls. You know, when we come to audit a client, we look for evidence that you've got an internal control process. You know, we talk with the management to find out what it is. We walk through just to get a good understanding of what the process is. But then, as part of the audit, we look for evidence. As I said earlier on, we need to build up a body of evidence to support our opinion. And that evidence that we look for are things like approvals, checks and controls, and just controls that make sure that things are working the way they should be. And the fact that somebody says that they're working is not enough. You know, we want to see initials on invoices that approve the invoices. We want to make sure that the checks are signed by people who should be signing them. Maybe you have a threshold over which checks must be signed by two people, or certain levels of responsibility. We look for all of these things. But this is the nitty-gritty of the internal control structure. The information and communication. Information must flow up and down. So when you decide what your goals are for the coming year and you develop a plan for it, you got to communicate it to your people. You got to communicate it from the board to the executive director, to the middle management, down to the ordinary staff. And it's a continuous process. It goes on day after day after day, week after week. And of course, you must get some feedback, so the information must come back up. The information coming back up to the board, at least in the financial sense, is comprised of periodic financial statements, whether it be they monthly or weekly or quarterly. Now, obviously, when everything is running smoothly, you can have maybe a monthly financial statement. You should at least have monthly financial statements, but you can have meetings frequently or less frequently, depending on how the organization is running. The monitoring is, the process of looking at the information that you're getting and making adjustments depending on how the results are coming out.
Let me ask one question in that regard. It seems to me that certainly as a nonprofit organization, a lot of our dimensions are different from a for-profit entity where you can just very much and very easily look at the bottom line. I think that we have a need to also include in the reporting, the monitoring, in the internal communications up and down the organizational structure, that we have a need to incorporate a lot of operational aspects of what we're doing to make sure that we are on track addressing the mission and that we aren't just off doing other kinds of things. And would we be able to look to you for some guidance in terms of maybe what you've observed in our reporting dynamics that would suggest that either we are on track or we need to improve by doing a few things a little bit maybe differently than we have been in the past? Would this be within the scope of the kinds of work that you do, or would this be something that's outside of those parameters?
That's a very open-ended question. And that project could be as big as you wish it to be. I think it's outside the scope of an audit, for sure. And I don't know enough about this organization to say what sort of time would be involved in it.
I think it's a very, you really do ask a very good question. Really, obviously, there's not just financial reporting, as you alluded to, there's social reporting. We do that to some degree in the 990. In fact, at the audit committee's behest, we modified the 990 and elaborated on a lot of information in there and detailed it out. I think as a board, you as an organization need to decide what's important for you for that reporting, not just the financial, but whether it's programmatic or whether it's social reporting, as to what your objectives are, and then meet with management and say, this is what we're interested in seeing. We want to see, we want to get a feel. What target audiences are we reaching? we know we've got certain groups that we want to reach out to. How well are we doing in meeting those goals? Our state, again, sort of goes back to the mission. Are we fulfilling our mission of the organization?
Right, and I think that a lot of that, in addition to the 990, relates to our relationship with the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the kind of interest they have in so far as the work that we are involved in doing. Would I be correct in that?
That's correct. And in fact, I've already started this this discussion with your CFO. Let me back up a moment. You know, over the last 2 years, I've given you fairly lengthy report cards and to-do lists, and I recognize that we can't get everything done overnight, that this is a journey in terms of getting to where we want to go. One of those things that I envisage over the next couple of years is changing slightly the reporting, the way you report some of your activities. I've been in contact with the CPB and looked at their reporting, and I'd like to see an alignment of your reporting more with what is done by NPR and by some of the other radio stations in terms of, you know, how you break out some of your financial information. Obviously, it's got to be done by station, but then within by function within station. So that's sort of I have this vision of where I see us going, or where I see this organization going, and that's certainly a critical component of it.
It's hard to get away from this tone at the top, the tone of the organization, because it just goes through everything. And, Campbell, you're asking great questions. And I think it is absolutely critical that you as a board set the tone that you want for the organization. Now, I understand that you have periodic, maybe quarterly meetings in different parts of the country, depending on where you have stations. Now, that, from an outsider's point of view, that sounds great. It sounds like, we go to New York, or we go to San Francisco or Washington, and we have our business meeting there, and we meet with other board members that we've known for years and have a great time. But do you really accomplish what you need to accomplish at those meetings? I mean, are they social affairs or are they business affairs? And you need to decide which it's going to be. If they're social affairs, your organization will drift and just won't really get anywhere. You need to have a very tight agenda, and everybody needs to have the information ahead of time so that you can all contribute meaningfully to these meetings. So you're... Yes?
I'm Marcel Reed, and I'm from W, Washington, D.C. And I went to our last, our local station board meeting just before I came here. And I asked them specifically, did they have ideas about what they wanted to see? And one of the very first questions that was raised by Jane Gatewood, who is our secretary of our local station board, was that she wanted to see the meetings reduced from 4 to 3 a year, because she did not know the purpose of the fourth meeting, and she served on the PMB. And the reason I asked that question is, I'm very aware that boards need to set the tone for an organization and not just be ceremonial. But more important than that, I think that we rise from the board to speak for the board. And we can't do that if we don't ask the boards what they want. And I'm amazed that you're talking about this, and this was one of the questions that they brought up, whether we were accomplishing the goals. I think that we are, but I think that we need to find a way to report it out to them that is very concise. So though I perfectly understand the long report. You know, I'm kind of like one of those people who believes what Einstein said. If it's not simple, maybe it shouldn't be explained. And you know, do you get it yourself? And brevity, you know, can you say it quickly in a way that people can pick it up? Because everyone's life is so filled. And when we come back with these tomes, the reason we don't get a response is because the people haven't read them. you know. So too much information in many cases is exactly the same as none.
Well, maybe you don't have the right people in these subcommittees that are wherever you're reporting to.
We report to
the local station.
Yeah, that is it. But we report in D.C. to our local station board. Yeah, we do report to our local station board. Okay.
Well, again, you know, if your meetings are more social than they are business, maybe they are too frequent and too long. But you certainly need to put the social aspect of it into perspective, the proper perspective.